Good afternoon. This is the professor, Dr. Ron Daniels, president of the Institute of the Black World 21st Century and distinguished lecturer emeritus from York College, City University of New York. I welcome you to this June 7th edition of Vantage Point here on 99.5 FM. That's WBAI on the Pacifica Network in collaboration with ycradio.org. That's right. The York College Radio Network is also plugged into these vital conversations. Well, today we're going to, I was listening to Donita Samuels with the joint WPFW-WBAI News, and she was talking about Tulsa. We'll be talking about Tulsa as well today. Report back from Tulsa, and we're going to include white economic envy and the destruction of Black Wall Street. Full conversation about that, Dr. Julianne Malvo, who has a program, actually, on WPFW, our sister station in Washington, D.C., will be joining us, as well as Reverend Dr. Robert Turner, who is the pastor of the historic Vernon AME Church. That is the church where many of the activities took place. It is the church where that has the sole remaining structure, the basement remaining from the destruction of Black Wall Street. He's pastor of that historic church. He'll be joining us to talk about what happened, what transpired, and we'll be talking about, is America ready? Is America ready for reparations? Actually, and then we'll open up the phones on the soapbox segment, and then have a little fun to some degree. Black Music Month. This is Black Music Month. I was actually delighted to be on Open Line yesterday, with the crew on Open Line, and Fatine and Jennifer Jones Austin. And we talked about Black music, and the issue is, the question became, name a artist or song that had an impact on the Black freedom struggle. We had a lot of fun with that. It was really good, and we'll be asking you to do likewise when we go up on the soapbox later on at the conclusion of the show. We'll hopefully have plenty of time for rapid fire engagement. First up, I always try to talk about where we are with this pandemic. Many people have a get out of jail card, that is to say a vaccination. It looks like Biden will not achieve his goal of 70% people at least with one shot by the Frederick Douglass Day, as I would prefer to call it. But nonetheless, great progress is being made. I'm deeply concerned, however, about sort of the politicization of the weaponization of this vaccine process. The Reverend Calvin L. Otis Butts had a visit, the historic Abyssinian Baptist Church. I guess maybe it was Sunday, or at least over the weekend. The First Lady, Jill Biden, was accompanied by Dr. Fauci, and they were there to visit a vaccination site that's being housed in Abyssinia Baptist Church. Reverend Butts has become a credible messenger, providing information about the vaccination, which is important for us all to do. But a couple of blocks away, apparently, there were demonstrators, you know, protesting the fact that people were getting vaccinations and so forth. Well, if you don't want to get a vaccination, that's sort of your right. It's not mandatory in these United States of America. However, you know, seatbelts are. You know, if you don't have a seatbelt, you know, you're going to get fined. If you don't have insurance for your automobile in the state of New York, then you're going to stop driving that automobile. It's mandated. It's mandatory. So it could be, a vaccination could be mandatory, but it isn't. So we just want people to obviously to study it, learn about it, and decide whether you do or do not want to get vaccinated. But if you don't want to get vaccinated, don't be terrorizing other people and trying to convince them that they shouldn't get a vaccination. You know, it seems to me that that's, and it's breaking down along political lines, left versus right, clearly in terms of those districts carried by Biden are signing up pretty readily. Those who are heavily Trump are not so much. So it's really tragic that we have this huge divide in our country, in the United States of America today. The other thing is a lot of anxiety is still floating around, and that's why we have our Community Cares Listening Line, our Community Cares Listening Line. That Community Cares Listening Line is designed to deal with the issues of anxiety around COVID, but now we're in the post-COVID what do you call it? The people who have the long-standing effects. I forget the terminology that's being used. So many people who have COVID, have gotten COVID, still have lingering effects. They call it their long haulers, I think, which is wrong haulers are out there. And they're having trouble, having issues. And so we want to be able to have those persons called, others who have issues that they want to deal with. There's still a lot of pent-up hostility and anxiety and frustration, child abuse, sexual abuse, harassment, all kind of things are going on. That's why we have the Community Cares Listening Line for an appropriate, listening. And that's it. It's confidential. It's confidential. So your information is not being given out and all that kind of stuff. And it's private and confidential. The number to call is 877-827-6677. 877-827-6677 is the number that you can call in order to actually plug into our Community Cares Listening Line, and please take advantage of the opportunity. Actually, great partnership with WBAI in that regard, and it has been very effective, and we want to continue to have this line available to you. That's the Institute of the Black World 21st Centuries Black Family Summit Community Cares Listening Line. Well, we're trying to connect with our guest for our segment moving forward. Looks like we haven't connected with Reverend Turner yet. Hopefully he will be joining us. And we're now trying to connect with our sister, Dr. Julianne Malvo, who is with our sister station in Washington, D.C. We haven't connected with her either, so we'll keep trying. But we're setting the stage in terms of all that went down, all that occurred. I mean, one of the most moving moments in my lifetime, the 100th anniversary of the destruction of the Greenwood neighborhood, the Greenwood community, which I had not known about. I just always knew about the destruction of Black Wall Street. But it was really the Greenwood neighborhood, this prosperous enclave in the segregated South, where Black people came together and built a phenomenal community, really largely middle class and folk, with their own restaurants and shops and stores, and I mean, just a self-contained community that ultimately was seen as, you know, Black folks out of their place, under siege, and eventually the Greenwood District, during the course of the Memorial Day weekend 100 years ago, because of a false allegation of a person in an elevator who supposedly accosted or assaulted a white woman. And of course, many of these attacks came for that reason. You had a situation where a white mob began an attack, but not before, and this is important, and because you'll find this pattern throughout the South, because veterans had gone off to fight in the First World War. They knew how to fight. They had learned how to fight. They probably knew how to fight before they even went in there. And there's always been a fear of Black people with guns. But a contingent of soldiers, former soldiers, went down to the jailhouse to defend and to make sure that there was not a lynching, that a lynching did not take place. And they stood their ground to defend the brother who had been arrested. And that further infuriated the mob. And so eventually even the National Guard was brought out, but essentially a mob was deputized to terrorize the community. And they went on a rampage that left hundreds of Black people dead. So much so that without a proper burial, in fact, they're still looking at potential mass graves because people were just unceremoniously dumped into mass graves. Others, thousands fled, leaving the city altogether or going to neighboring cities and so forth. Thousands did. There are some people who actually sought refuge in the in the basement of the historic Vernon A. Meade Church, and Reverend Turner is a person that we're trying to connect with. So I'm really sorry we haven't connected with them yet, but we'll continue to do so. But the topic, you've all been there, our listening audience, and listen up, because you know one of the things that we can always do on WBAI, absent a guest, we have guests. We have people who are knowledgeable, who follow these issues very carefully. And so the question we were proposing for our audience to call in and address, and we can start that now. We can move it up, and when our guests plug in, we can actually get them online. The number to call is 212-209-209-2877. Is America really ready now, having seen all that you saw with Tulsa? Is America really now ready for reparations? That's the topic that we want to take up. And you can call in, and you can call us at 212-209-2877. 212-209-2877. Call us and give us your opinion on that question while we're trying to still reach both of our esteemed guests, Dr. Robert Turner, who is the pastor of the historic Vernon A.M.E. Vernon A.M.E. Church in Tulsa, and of course, Dr. Julianne Malvo. Actually, I typically give her a call before and just make sure she's ready, and I didn't do that today. I mean, wait, I sent a reminder and all of that, so Dr. J, you got to come on through for me. By the way, she is due a congratulations. She has now become the dean of the first ever ethnic studies program at California State University, Los Angeles. So she's in Washington, D.C. now, but she'll be soon moving to L.A. She also wants to do that to be closer to her mother who's and her family on the West Coast. But, of course, she is the president emeritus of Bennett College for Women and Black America's leading political economist, Dr. Julianne Malvo. Again, we hope that we will be able to join us. But in the meantime, the phones are open to you right now. You can get right into the conversation at 212-209-2877. 212-209-2877. Is America ready, finally ready for reparations? And again, the Tulsa Massacre is one of many. The bloody red summer of 1919 preceded it, with East St. Louis and in Houston, Texas, and I mean, all across the country. And by the way, in many of these instances, black soldiers coming from the war, holding their ground, battling, fighting, but eventually being overwhelmed, but not just giving up, not going docilely, you know, but battling. And it raises the question, as you've heard me say before, about, you know, America's most patient patriots. We fought in every war. In every war. We talked about that either last week or the week before on Memorial Day. We talked about just the willingness of Africans in America to fight for this country. And even in the face of coming home and not having your rights, and still just this dual consciousness, this desire to actually engage has been a serious question that we've been facing. So again, you can give us a call, though I understand that now we may soon have Reverend Dr. Turner. He's a very busy person, so we understand, and perhaps we'll be able to connect with Dr. Malvo as well. So as soon as, but you know the number, and we'll pick this up later. But we're just literally waiting. We're hopefully a minute or two away from connecting with Reverend Dr. Turner. And by the way, those of you, it's interesting, Dr. Turner, when I first met him, and he's a commissioner on the National African American Reparations Commission, by the way. When I first heard him, I said, are you any kin to the legendary human rights voter registration advocate from over in Montgomery, Alabama, over in Alabama. And it turns out that he is. And the Center for Constitutional Rights was, you know, helped to defend his father against allegations of voter fraud, which had nothing to do with voter fraud at all. The same thing, voter suppression. They were trying to suppress the black vote. And his father was a leading advocate for voter registration. So again, we're waiting for him to join us in this conversation, because he is, you saw really a number of the civil rights leaders gathered at his church, because that is the place that people gather when there is anything to do with the massacre. If you want to go to sacred ground, you know, you want to go to Vernon AME Church. So again, still waiting for him to connect while we are, I understand he'll be joining us any moment, and we're still trying to reach Dr. Julianne Malvo. But again, a great moment in American history, a moment of inflection, driven by so many things, not the least of which is the Black Lives Matter movement for Black Lives, broadly defined, in which millions of people have been into the streets. And I'm very encouraged, too, that many of the activists and organizers are now deciding they also want to run for office, that they not only want to be on the outside, they want to be on the inside where the decisions are being made. And that is a good thing well in terms of moving forward, in terms of moving the struggle forward at this critical hour in American history. It is unusual. It is extraordinary. It is one of, again, it is good to be alive, but it's also a dangerous moment in American history, because the forces of white nationalism and white power are out to suppress the black vote. Had a conversation today with Congresswoman Barbara Lee. She voted against the war in Iraq, you know, and her bona fides as a progressive legislator are not in question. And we talked about the precarious moment, because now you have, you know, a person or two, Kristen Sinema from Arizona, and of course Joe Manchin is the name you hear over and over again, who are emphasizing bipartisanship over voting rights, bipartisanship over the Floyd bill that would begin to at least have some measure of credibility and accountability for police violence and whatnot. So it's a precarious moment. And now see, we have Reverend Dr. Turner, who's with us. Reverend Robert Turner, welcome to Vantage Point.
How are you, Dr. Daniel? Good to be with you today.
Yeah, it's good to be with you. Just having me talking about the filibuster. I'm having the filibuster waiting for my guest today, but I told him you're extraordinarily busy. And so we were trying to track you down, because we know that even though the commemoration, the 100th anniversary is over, nonetheless, you know, I'm sure that you're still very busy. I know that every week you stage a protest. The images and promo we sent out had those images on it. So let's dive right in it with the time we have left, because now we have to sort of tighten it up a little bit. Would you talk to us about, share with the audience the unique role that Vernon AME Church played in providing refuge for those fleeing the terrorist mob during the massacre. Your church is unique in that regard. Would you please just give us a synopsis of the role that your church played?
Yeah, thank you for the question. Historic Vernon AME Church, founded in 1905, and purchased our first piece of property on Greenwood Avenue in 1908. And during the massacre of 1921, People came and hid in our basement. In fact, we are on Greenwood Avenue to this day. We're the oldest continuous land on a black or white in the entire Greenwood district. And Greenwood is like the Beale Street of Memphis, the Rodeo Drive of Beverly Hills, the Wall Street of New York. It was the place everybody wanted to be. And because of that, it saw the brunt of the devastation during the massacre. And so for people to have a place to run to for refuge during the massacre on Greenwood was priceless. I mean, and it saved lives. We're still here. We still have that basement, and we still have that refuge room, and we even still have the chairs they sat in the on the following Sunday. Right now, we're trying to raise some funds to restore that basement and to make it more amenable for tours, because we want to share this story even better with the world.
And we noticed that during the course of the proceedings, your church was the place to go. So just sort of give us a sense of how the anniversary unfolded and the role that your church played. I know I saw one scene where many of the civil rights leaders were gathered in your church and so forth. So can you just talk to us a bit about, you know, the centrality of Vernon AME and your ministry in that process?
Yes, yes, yes. We, during this past week, have hosted the Majority Whip, James Clyburn. We've hosted United States Senator Chris Coons. We've hosted Congresswoman Rochester and her daughter. We've hosted Congress Lady Barbara Lee out of California. And we've hosted Bishop Michael Mitchell and Harold E. Seawright and Bishop Bastard McKenzie and Bishop William Barber. And the Reverend Jesse Jackson Sr. and his lovely family. We have hosted Alderman and our colleague on NARC, Alderman Robin Ruth Simmons. We've hosted several people, actress and documentarian Erica Alexander from Living Single. We have been, and many more people that, and I'm sorry that I apologize to them in their absence because their name escapes me. But we have hosted several individuals this week inside our church at Vernon for our prayer wall for racial healing dedication. I mean, everybody basically was there. That was pretty much the preeminent event in Tulsa on May 31st, where we had several of those folk I've already mentioned come by. And that prayer wall for racial healing is now, because it's been dedicated already, the only public prayer wall in the world outside of Jerusalem. The way
in the world now. You're kind of breaking up a little bit now.
I said that prayer wall for racial healing is the only one of the only ones outside of Jerusalem in the world. And it is the only one for racial healing in the world. So we encourage everybody to come. It is essentially at Ground Zero. It's on Greenwood, and it is our wailing off our community for the devastation of the massacre in 1921, but not just in 1921. The massacres that have happened from 1898, really, from Wilmington, North Carolina, till today, our people have been on the attack by this country that we've only shown love to. And we have a space now for people to offer prayer and to pray for racial healing and to lead to be change agents for justice and for reparations.
Now, let me ask you this. You were talking about the fact that you're having to do fundraising to restore the refuge room and so forth, which really leads me to the question of to what degree has any of this moved the needle, so to speak, in terms of reparations from the state of Oklahoma and the city of Tulsa for repair. I know there's been, you know, the whole question of the current mayor contributing to and acknowledging the need to excavate for the mass graves, but that's not the same thing as paying reparations. In fact, he's come out being opposed to reparations. So where are we in terms of movement of the city and the state to finally, with three survivors there and just, you know, hundreds of descendants, are we any closer to getting these folks to understand that reparation comes before reconciliation?
Absolutely. And I agree with you. Reparations has to come up for reconciliation, and enough for reconciliation to be true. And unfortunately, Dr. Daniels, we are not near it, and definitely not as close to it as I would like for us to be. We just recently, to give the good before I get the bad, you know, the president came here on Tuesday, first president in 100 years to come and recognize what happened as a massacre. We had a president come last year, but he only came to campaign. That was Donald Trump. And this Wednesday, and the president's speech, I mean, we're thankful for his presence, but he left a lot to be desired in what he said. And we had just recently, this past Wednesday, with Reverend Jesse Jackson and I attended to the council meeting together. And I had to leave early to go to a revival. We're having the city council passed a resolution to acknowledge the massacre as being a massacre, and the recommendations, the report from the commission back in 2001, and they want to do more study and all of this stuff. But nowhere in the resolution was there any mention of reparation or restitution, criminal investigation, none of that stuff. And so it's disheartening that we waited 100 years and we only can get a resolution that didn't even mention the word reparations. While I do, you know, because I know people worked hard on the resolution, I'm thankful for the start, but we definitely cannot end there. And I will definitely continue to protest, because God didn't send me to City Hall every Wednesday during the rain, sleet, hail, and snow to let the word number reparations to end with a resolution. You know, we will end when justice comes.
Now, one of the things that I noticed, in fact, it was interesting. I was attending a service, actually, where my wife is a deaconette, chair of the deaconette board at one of the historic churches here in East Elmhurst in Corona Congregational Church. And the pastor, you know, is very much identifying with the Black Lives Matter movement. And he wanted to he referenced Tulsa, and then he wanted to show a video. And he did show a video, and the video was, I think it was entitled Tulsa Rising. And, you know, it went through, and I saw the video, and I was sort of being quiet, but then I kind of asked, as a matter of personal privilege, to get working on these issues where I could comment. Because it was clear from this video, and I've seen some other things that seem to be wanting to make the memorial a museum, a tourist attraction, a kind of Disneyland. Y'all come and see what it's like, and there'll be a place for you to come and to meditate and to remember and study the narrative and whatnot, but nothing about reparations. And I'm wondering, I mean, it seems that this is being designed as a tourist attraction, which leads me to believe, you know, are we in a situation where in the state of Oklahoma and in Tulsa, we may need to be doing what happened in North Carolina, I think it was, and in some other states, where we may have to be talking about shutting off tourism, period, yeah, to these states, yeah, in order for them to recognize. I mean, this is a desecration. This is a desecration. I remember we did the forum last year with ACLU and you and all that, and the word was the blood of our ancestors cries out. And so
that's right.
Maybe we need to talk about some economic sanctions, boycotting, not going, not falling for the okey-doke of this tourism thing. Your thoughts?
Well, I'm sorry, I missed that last part, Dr. Dane. What you said?
I'm saying that when I just laid that out to get your reaction to the fact if they're not going to move, we may need to move them. By saying we're not visiting, we're not coming to I mean, we can come to your place and all of that, but we're not going to these museums. And then there's other, yeah, kind of tourism. I'm sure the state wants to the city and the state wants to, in fact, it opened up with, oh, Tulsa is such a beautiful place. It's such a wonderful city. It's this, it's that. So they're trying to promote tourism to Tulsa. Well, if they want tourism to Tulsa, then they better talk about reparations for the descendants and the survivors.
Yeah, so that really has been my main point of contention. In fact, I vividly remember telling them that in a meeting that, you know, this should not be Disneyland. This is still the largest uninvestigated crime scene in America, and it should be treated like such. We want to learn our story, but we don't want them to feel as though this has arrived. And unfortunately, when they come, they can't stay in a black-owned hotel because we don't have one, you know.
Right.
And they can't fly in a black-owned airline because we don't have one. And so it's sad that even in our grief, even in our seeking for justice and seeking to gain allies for reparations, that we're benefiting communities that don't look like us, right?
Right.
And so that is unfortunate. That is definitely unfortunate. And what I challenge people to do when they come, if they come, to come out and join us on Wednesday in protest preparations, to come and write letters to our city councilman and our mayor that a resolution is not enough. We need justice. So to hopefully increase the number of foot soldiers and allies across the country, like the petition I have right now on change.org for reparations has now become one of the largest petitions in the world for reparations. And that type of stuff sends a message to this city that, yeah, people may be coming, but they are coming not as tourists, but they're coming as foot soldiers to pound the pavement for justice.
All right. Okay. Well, I can say that Congresswoman Sheila Jackson Lee came, and she is our leader on H.R. 40. H.R. 40 was mentioned and referenced throughout these conversations.
Yes.
It has had an impact,
absolutely.
You know, in terms of pushing the needle forward on H.R. 40. We're going to pass it. And there was a hearing on May 19th. You're aware of the Judiciary Committee and those courageous survivors, one of which is 107 years old. They mustered up the energy and the courage and so forth to tell the story. And we cannot let them down. And so H.R. 40 is going to pass. And part of that will be to keep Tulsa on the agenda. And we really appreciate you, Reverend Turner, for doing that. Now, is there a phone number or a website that people can connect to stay in touch with Vernon AME Church and the prayer wall and the different initiatives that you're working on?
Yes. Vernon, VERNONAME.com is our website. If they want to schedule time to come out and see our historic place, they can. Also, our GoFundMe is available. It's historic. Vernon AME GoFundMe page. Make sure you see the one that's organized by myself as the pastor. And the petition is at change.org. And if you're on Cash App and you want to give, just type in $Vernon AME, and you will see us there.
All right. Well, we want to let you get back to being very, very busy. I had made a decision to come belatedly because I got my get out of jail card. But when you've been in jail so long, it's hard to actually get beyond the bars. You know what I mean? So I finally decided after one of our HR 40 strategy sessions, I said, well, why shouldn't I go? But I couldn't really get the information quickly enough, particularly through the Human Rights Watch folk. And by the time I got it, it was almost a week later. By that time, the cost of the flights was up to almost $1,000. I didn't know where. So anyway, but I am going to be coming because I really want to come and spend a day or so and to, you know, go with you to protests and so forth. So who knows? We might even organize a delegation to do that. But rest assured that we have your back. We have the back of the brothers and sisters in Tulsa, and we are going to continue to move forward.
Wonderful. I can't wait.
Thank you very much. Really appreciate
it.
All right, Reverend Robert Turner, again, of the historic Vernon AME Church. I don't know what happened to Dr. Malvo. She must have gotten busy or whatever, but that's we return now. We have time, really about this amount of time that we had allotted to go up on the soapbox to get your opinions. You've heard the interview. You also heard my commentary about it. So we have two questions we're really posing. One, is America ready for reparations? Is America ready for reparations? Phones wide open now at 212-209-2877. 212-209-2877. The other is a little lighter, if you will. The other is a question about Black Music Month. This is Black Music Month. Jimmy Carter, apparently, I forget what year it was, back in the 90s, declared Black Music Month. And then, of course, we can't forget John Conyers. He was a jazz man. He fought hard to make to have jazz appreciated as America's only really authentic music between jazz and the blues. That's it. But the question is, give us your artists and or artists and or group or song which had an impact on the Black freedom struggle. You hear my opening. My opening is with Fight the Power with the Isley Brothers. I used the Isley Brothers version. But when I was talked, when I was asked about it yesterday on Open Line, I talked about Chuck D and Professor Griff and the folks with Public Enemy. I said, "Bah, they made a tremendous contribution to the issue." So I said, "Fight the power," but you, I'd just be interested to see what people think. Again, 212-209-2877. Let's go immediately to our audience and let's keep it tight and short. Good afternoon. You're on Vantage Point.
Yes. Hello.
Good afternoon. You're on the air.
Yes. Name is James Baker.
Yes, I'm James. How
Brooklyn,
you doing?
Bed-Stuy, Brooklyn.
Yes.
Okay. Listen, I totally agree with the interview you had just a second ago. When President Biden showed up, all of his comments, they were totally shallow, smoke and mirrors, and he never mentioned anything about reparations. Plus, that tells you where most of them stand. I mean, and we're referring to white people. They rather ask white people whether or not we deserve reparations. And long as they give the answer, then you know what it's going to be. On top of that, he lied about the planes. He said they were private planes. They were not. They were military planes. And only military people were flying those planes when they dropped those bombs, just like they did in Philadelphia. You remember May 13th?
Right.
Yeah, 1985. They just commemorated that, too. That was just as bad. The whole black neighborhood burned, dropping a bomb. And guess where the planes come from? The bomb came from the military base right there in New Jersey, right? So what I'm saying is it's all smoke and mirrors. He don't intend. Listen, the man, his own VP, who he chose, he was forced to choose, told you what he is, who he actually side with. He has no intention of doing anything. Look at the action he took. The lie, and then he didn't say a word. And by the way, a large portion of those people who died, guess what they were? World War One veterans, were they not? Shouldn't they consider?
Oh yeah, no. We talked about the facts that they fought, but I do disagree with I do disagree with you, and I'll tell you why later on. Because actually, there are a lot of equity policies that the Biden administration is advancing. Actually, there is I'm trying to get the number to rebuild black neighborhoods. There's a whole bunch of things. And in fact, we're on the verge of getting H.R. 40 passed. It would not pass unless President Biden signs it. Every indication is that he will. He should have mentioned reparations. Everybody noticed it. We noticed it. Yeah. We sent a strong word to him that he should have done so. But I have no doubts but that H.R. 40 is going to pass. And that will also deal with the question of Black Wall Street as well. But look, appreciate your attentiveness and being awoke, because we definitely need to be clear about this. By the way, Black Music Month, can you think of a name or give us a name or an artist or a group that put forth a song that helped change or contributed to the Black freedom struggle? Oh, he's gone? Okay. All right. Let's go to our next caller. Good afternoon. You're on Vantage Point.
Hi. Good afternoon. First, before I forget, I wanted to let all the listeners know, and the producers as well, that they should vote no on the new referendum from New Day Pacifica. Please vote no, because if people vote yes and they win, There will be no more democracy on WBAI or any of the other stations, and the powers that be will not be elected people, and they're acting like they're in another state that's trying to take away the
okay,
vote.
Okay, all right, we got your infomercial. We got your infomercial, which I don't.
It's not a commercial.
I understand. Do you want to address the question at hand or not?
That's what I'm doing. So all you right, know, well, like they could take your show off the air. That's what they want to do.
That is being processed in a different manner. Do you want to address the question of is America ready for reparations? Let's go to our next caller. Good afternoon. You're on Vantage Point.
Hi. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you. Good afternoon. How are you?
Hi. Good. Thank you. I'm Joseph Lipinski. I'm white, and I'm from upstate New York originally, although I lived in New York City for years. And in answer to your question, I want to say that having grown up in a almost exclusively white industrial town up near Albany, Schenectady, I think there was one black family in that town, mostly immigrants. My family was from Polish immigrants. Yes, General Electric, right.
I did my graduate work in Albany, so I kind of know about GE and General Electric. Go right in.
There? Yeah. Well, I want to say that I never heard of reparations until just recently, as a result of, I think, your program. I came upon it on, Googling various subjects. I've always been involved with civil rights and my own self and my life.
You need to speak a little faster, though. We have a lot of callers behind you, so I need you to get right to the point.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Let us know your perspective.
Okay, well, I'm old, that's why. Okay.
I am, too. Go right ahead.
Yeah, well, then I'll just say that I think for the first time I've heard about this Tulsa. I never heard about that before either until just now. And I want to encourage you to keep talking about reparations because it's absolutely correct. I don't think that anybody that I had never heard that concept discussed all my life. So
All right. Well, we get the point, and I'm glad to hear that because, you know, that's why the education is important and getting people on board with us. So we appreciate you listening, at least being open to listening, hearing, because I have a theory that if more people knew better, they would do better. And perhaps you're among those who are in that group. Thanks much. Really appreciate your input. Others can call it 212-209-2877. 212-209-2877. Is America ready for reparations? But also while you're at it, if you can give us, it is Black Music Month, the name of a group, artist, or song that had an impact on the Black freedom struggle. Let's go back to our listening audience. Good afternoon. You're on Vantage Point.
Hi, this is Benson. I'm calling from Plainfield, New Jersey. And in the early 90s, I convinced a friend of mine, now deceased, actually cousin, now deceased, that movement to sign or file for reparations was opposed with the threat to be arrested. So I convinced him to go ahead and do it along with me. So we signed this petition despite the threat. And in the early 2000s, while I was volunteering at the WBAI, I did learn more about Black Wall Street. And of course, I've known about it for a while. And, of course, in terms of the question that you asked, is America ready? They know about it, and they're probably going to try to kick the can down the road for a little while. all of us, if not the majority of us, are ready for it. They're just not necessarily ready for it because everyone's going to think that they're entitled to receive some remuneration as much as we deserve. And in terms of the songs, I would say Sly and the Family Stone, Stand, and also any of the rap artists from the 1990s, I say KRS-One in particular, and Public Enemy.
All right. Okay, thank you much. Really appreciate your input. We're ready, but others may keep on pushing. Oh, what about that song? Keep on pushing. 212-209-2877. 212-209-2877. Good afternoon. You're on Vantage Point. Good afternoon. You're on the air.
Oh, good afternoon, Professor Daniels.
How are you this afternoon?
I'm fine. My name is Arnold. Now the question is whether America is ready or not for reparations. It doesn't matter because reparations are owed. I mean, with all the attempted genocides, 500 years of subjugation, it doesn't matter if America is ready for it. Because as Malcolm says, there's not going to be any peace because enough's enough. 500 years is enough. So reparations is owed, and we need a down payment now.
Right.
That's the bottom line.
Got a song for us?
I mean, if you just take the transatlantic slave trade, I mean, everybody's talking about the Holocaust, the transatlantic slave trade, I mean, is a double Holocaust.
That's
so,
right.
It's just so many factors. So, it's no more like dilly-dallying, no more debating. I mean, it's a human right. So basically, it doesn't matter if America's ready. They got to get ready. Because reparations is not a request. It's a demand.
All right. Okay, let's go to our next caller, if you will. In the meantime, others can also call us at 212-209-2877. 212-209-2877. Is America ready for reparations? But also, do you have a song, artist, or a group that contributed towards the Black freedom struggle? Like I just mentioned, what about somebody like Curtis Mayfield, all the stuff he did, for example, the Keep On Pushing and all the different songs that he put out. I found that on yesterday on Open Line, it was really rich. The people were coming up with different renditions, different songs that really helped to push the movement forward. I talked about Chuck D, Public Enemy. Of course, I used the Isley Brothers version of Fight the Power, but certainly Fight the Power is one of those ideas. Good afternoon. You're on Vantage Point.
Hello.
Good afternoon. You're on the air.
Okay. I'm assuming that's me. Okay.
That's you.
Thank you. Congrats, Madassi. Thank you. Very good program. Right away, I'd say James Brown. I'm going to start with that first because it has to do with the Black aesthetic and has to do how if you go to Africa now, and I just came back, everything has gotten lighter or whiter or straighter and not as African aesthetic as it should be. But when he
so
says,
James Brown, I'm Black and I'm Proud, that's the one
I'm
you
black
want to go
and
with?
I'm Black and I'm Proud is the one. Coming up in Times Square in the 70s and 80s, coming out of the subway, a blonde white guy was coming down the steps singing, "Say it loud, I'm Black and I'm Proud."
All right, okay.
Hey, that did it for me.
All right.
White, blonde, blue eyes, singing, "Say it loud, I'm Black." I don't even know if he knew what he was saying. Maybe he was high, but it sure felt good. Okay, so
all
that's
right.
The feeling that we should walk away with. And as for reparations, get reparations where you can, my brother and sisters, okay? We know they owe it to us. We can't wait for them. You do what you can in order to get your reparations now because it's not promised to you in the future.
All right, my brother.
Thank
appreciate
you.
Your call.
All right. Okay.
All right. 212-209-2877. 212-209-2877. The question is America ready for reparations? And secondly, Black Music Month. This is Black Music Month, and Black people, we are some bad people who are creative, innovative. We got it going on when we're in our right mind, and sometimes it's hard to be in your right mind up in the middle of white supremacy and institutional structure, racism, and all that stuff. Name a group, artist, or song that had a impact on the Black freedom struggle. Let's go right back to our listening audience. Good afternoon. You're on Vantage Point.
Hi, Dr. Ryan. I'd say Gil Scott-Heron, the revolution will not be televised.
Yay! That's right. Gil Scott. How could you miss Gil Scott, man? Gil Scott was on Have You Heard About Johannesburg? All that good stuff that Gil Scott-Heron did, right?
A lot of good stuff. Doctor, could I say they were protesting at Abyssinia Dr. Fauci's presence and his deceptive role, not that people were getting vaccines. That's what my understanding is. But can I say something about the Tulsa community?
Go right ahead.
You know, with reparations, I'd also like to say something, but with Tulsa, can it be perceived as a community policing devolved in a twisted form where there's really no professional police force, and it's what happens when the community goes against itself, and that could be where we're heading. I just hate to think that. But as far as reparations, you know, it's my understanding, and people have said that 300,000 Union soldiers, along with 30,000 so-called colored troops, some of whom are buried right near my house here, that was the reparations for this country's sin of slavery. Thanks very much, Doctor.
Wow, I didn't quite understand all that, but sounds to me like reparations are due for those tragedies and those travesties that we need to deal with. We can quickly squeeze in maybe one or two more, so let's go right to it. Good afternoon, you're on Vantage Point.
No more.
Oh, no more. Okay, all right. Okay, well, folks had the opportunity. You should have got your call in while you had a chance. Anyway, rapid fire. There are so many different groups that we could talk about. I really enjoyed that discussion on about Black Music Month because our music has contributed. The Black Freedom songs, Mavis Staples and Mom and Pop Staples and the Stavis singers, you know, singing those Black Freedom songs, you know, helping to inspire people in the civil rights movement. That music was what helped drive people coming out of the church. Aretha Franklin with Respect. And of course, there was a whole documentary did on Marvin Gaye. What's going on? Whew. I mean, just think of who we are. Just think of the incredible reservoir of music. Got to give a shout out to Bob Slade. Of course, you know, irrespective to the station and all that kind of stuff, this was a brother deeply steeped in the in the music and the culture and of our people. And of course, he's really, really missed. We had opportunity to interview him here once on WBAI. He came on and we had a great time together. So again, be thinking about that, just who we are as a people and the power of our music. They talked about KRS-One. I mean, folks who were, I mean, some people were into gangster rap and various other things, and people are free to do whatever they want to do. But there were others who really were talking about moving from realness to revolution, uplifting. And then I was thinking about Les McCann, you know, jazz artist. He had a song on one of his albums, Red, Black, and Green. And then he had Africa, what was it, Africa, the center of the world, you know. So our folk have been into it. And actually, when you start studying a lot of the early music, even people like Dizzy Gillespie and all of them, they were inspired by what they saw in Africa. And then, of course, I'm thinking about the legendary brother, oh, goodness gracious, from here, who lived almost to be 100 years old. Oh, my God, I can't mention that. Anyway, we interviewed him as well. So some great folks. Anyway, we got to wrap it up. We'll be back next week. By the way, next week, we are going to have the granddaughter of, I'm blanking on the name now, the granddaughter of Black Boy. Anyway, we'll get it out to you. I'm talking about a senior moment. I just had Richard Wright's granddaughter, Julia Wright, will be our very special guest here next week, not only to talk about the legacy of her father, we're going to talk about Elaine, Arkansas, another place where a massacre went down, but she is a human rights activist in her own right. The granddaughter of Richard Wright, the iconic book Black Boy, will be with us next week here on Vantage Point. And we'll see you again next week on Vantage Point.